All right, we're holding on set of Zion Amid Bays, about 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins with Zaini Seha. We learned in the Mishnah that we had a situation where a woman had collected or sold or what have you part of her ksuba, and we said that then at that point she has to do the rest of her selling and based in because, and we said that fits with what Rav Shimon says because once when she's not entitled to mezonos, we said she has to sell and based in, and once she's collected part of her ksuba, Rav Shimon is saying that she's not entitled to mezonos anymore. Whereas the Chachamim are saying that no. The question is, you might ask, the memory of Shimon Sabad Balay Amrin and Mitzvah Kesef Kokol Kasef. So you're telling me then that Shimon holds, we don't say that when she's owed some of the money, it's considered as if she's still owed all of it. And what we mean is, we're talking about the third, where do we know the whole concept of a ksuba from? We've touched on this before. We touched on it in the first paragraph. The Gemara is going to discuss it also on the Gemara in the last Mishnah of the Masechta, whether the ksuba is deraisa or derabanan. One way of looking at it is the ksuba is deraisa because we learned it from the pasuk kesef yishko kemorer habsolos, that there's such a thing as morer habsolos, and there has to be a certain amount of kesef paid for it. And then we learn from that that's in the case of the mafasa that uses that expression, and then in the case of onus, it says the amount for kishkolim, so therefore we make a zeta shava back and forth, we said. So the Torah uses the expression kesef, that she's owed a certain amount of kesef. So then Rav Shimon seems to be saying that once she's been paid some of that kesef, even though she's owed more of it still, you don't consider anymore that she's still owed that kesef. Well, not she's still owed the rest of it, in other words, but we can't say that now it's called, that now it has the same name kesef anymore. Once some of it is missing, you can't say that it still has the name of the whole thing. She's still entitled to the money, obviously, but we're saying, in other words, that at that point, when the Torah gives something a name, it means that you have to have all of it in order for it to have that name. If you have only part of it, it doesn't have the same name. Rabbanan Sabri Amin and Mr. Kesef to Kol Kesef. That would be Rav Shimon. Whereas Rabbanan would say Amin and Mr. Kesef to Kol Kesef, that we do. So you only owe some of the Kesef, fine. Kesef is Kesef.
Yes.
The problem is, Ha'ib Chashamin and Lohu. We find that they say the other way around. The Tanya, we learn a Braisa, we learned this in Yevamos. The Torah says about a Kohen Gadol, the last week's Parsha, Vahu Isha B'Sulah, that the Kohen Gadol has to marry a Psula, and the Torah doesn't just say Vahu Isha B'Sulah. The expression is Vahu Isha B'Sulah. So what does that mean? Perhaps with a Geddes, she called a B'Sulah. It comes to be rid of Meir. Meir says it comes to teach us that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a Begeddes, because a Begeddes already, who B'Sulim, are gone. Not completely gone. We talked about earlier in the Masechta that there's the Rashi and the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim hold that the difference is that a Begeddes still has Domim. There's still blood by the first time, but there isn't. It's not quite as tight the opening as by a Naira. And then we mentioned then that Rabbeinu Chananel, so that Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who says the other way around. The Rambam also brings the Gaonim who had the Girsa the other way around. The Rambam says that that's not correct. That's the other way around. That a Begeris doesn't have Domim, but she does have there is the Pesach Sosum as opposed to Pesach Asurach. Whatever it is, the point is that with a Begeris, because she's older as opposed to a Naira, there's some aspect of her Besolim that is not in the same state that it was before. And Rav Meir says, therefore, she's possible to marry a Kohen Gadol. Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon, Machshir, and Begeris. Whereas Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon say that he is allowed to marry a Begeris. So it sounds like the other way around. Because we're saying that even Mixas Besula, she's partially a Besula in the sense that her Besulim are not, it's color Besula to some extent, and yet they're saying you're allowed to marry her, she's still considered a Besula. Here you're telling me Rav Shimon is saying that Mixas Kesef is not considered Kesef.
You should think the other way around.
No, the answer is Hossam Bekroy, please. That the answer is, when it comes to the matter of the Besula, what it is that Rav Meir versus Rav Elazar and Rav Shimon are arguing about the meaning of the pasuk. Meaning, basically, yes, Rav Shimon would say that mixes of something is not considered kecholai. In that particular case, the wording of the pasuk forces Rav Shimon to learn differently. And in fact, we're going to see as we go through that the way he learns that pasuk does fit with this idea that mixes of something is not considered kecholai. Namely like this. Rav Meir Sava Besula Afilu Mixas Besulim. If it just said Behuisha Besula, then it would mean even if she only has partial Besulim, it's good enough. It says Besuleha, Hur Besulim, means Abdekul Kulu Besulim, means that it has to be complete Besulim, meaning that she can't be a Begeris, she can't be Kulu Besuleha. And when it adds Bivsuleha, when I have a base over there, Bivsuleha, then it means Kedarka Ein Shaloi Kedarka Loi. It means that she's that she's kosher to a kohen gadol. She's possible to a kohen gadol if she had relations to darka. But Rav Meir is saying if she had relations shaloi kadarka, so she's not a b'sula shlema in the sense. So the makom b'sulim, in the place of b'sulim, she's still whole, still intact. Shaloi b'makom b'sulim, though, she has had relations. Nevertheless, though, she's still allowed to marry the kohen gadol. So he would say, in other words, that the yud and the hay of the suleha is coming to say that it can't just be partial besulim, it has to be complete besulim. But once you have complete besulim in makam besulim, then biv suleha tells us that we don't care about besulim anywhere else. That's Rav Meir. Rav Elazar Rav Shimon Savri, no, the other way around. Besula shlema mashma. The word besula by itself means shlema, means a complete besula, that nothing is lacking. Bisuleha afilu mistas besulim. That only because it adds the yud and the hay would it mean even partial besulim. So there we have it. If it only said besula, they would say dafka has to be shlema. Just like they're saying over here, kesef means the whole kesef, the whole 200 zulas, nothing less. Same thing there. They would say that besula means the whole besula. Only because it adds the yud and the hay would it mean only a partial besula is good enough. Meaning, therefore, that a begeris would be fine. And bivsuleha, then on the contrary, the base of bivsuleha comes to teach us, shiyu kol bivsuleha kayom. And it means that all of her bivsulim have to be intact. They'd be kadaka ben shaloi kadaka, because they would say that if she had relations shaloi kadaka, she is possible for the kohen gadol. So it comes out then that they are. That Rav Shimon is being consistent. He does say, when the Torah gives us a noun, the Torah gives us a noun to describe something, you have to have the complete thing. Except in that case, because the Torah added the days at the beginning and the yud and the hay at the end, teaches us extra things. In the case of Kesef over here, we don't have any of that. The Baal HaTorah, by the way, points out that given that the halacha is like a mayor, that she has to have to be a naira, he says that the remez and the fact that the Torah uses the word bivsuleha, you have an extra bays and you have an extra yud there. I don't remember what he does with the hay, but he says the extra bays and yud equals 12 to teach us that she has to be a naira, which is up to 12 years old. Okay. Getting back to the topic of our Mishnah, where according to Rav Shimon, once she's collected part of her ksuba, she's not entitled to mezonos. The Gemara tells the case. Hahi itza the tofsa kasa de kasva b'ksubasa. There was a woman, an amana, who had grabbed a hold of a silver cup to pay towards her ksuba. The silver cup wasn't worth the entire amount of her ksuba, but it's worth part of it. Katava mezonos. Now she's coming to Beis Din to demand mezonos. So the case came to Rava. So he tells the assignment, Zilu Havala Mazonas. Go give her Mazonas. You're thinking because she collected part of her Ksuba, therefore she's not entitled to Mazonas, like Rav Shimon says. Left the Khoshla Hadid Rav Shimon, Dama Layman, Mixas Kesef, Kakol Kesef. Nobody worries about Rav Shimon's opinion that Mixas Kesef is not considered Kakol Kesef. In other words, Rava is saying, even though it's broader than Stam Mishnah, even though you have the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is Rav Shimon, and usually the Halacha is like Stam Mishnah. But in this case, since, first of all, the Braisa specifies that it's Rav Shimon, and second of all, even in our Mishnah, you have the Chachamim Omrim, then no, that rule doesn't apply. The Halacha is not like our Mishnah. There's no reason to think that it should. You owe her her Mizonis.
Like a
Chachamim. And in fact, Mefarshim say, I mean, how did she get a hold of the silver cup in the first place? Mefarshim say that actually they may have allowed her to take it, even though normally an Amana can't grab the Kaltalid towards her. So anyway, only Kaukaid. They may have figured, you know what, we'll outsmart her. We'll allow her to take that silver cup. Then that way we'll repulse her from the Zionists. And they come to Rava and he tells them, sorry, that doesn't work that way. Next, Sholchle Rava Breid Rava Lerav Yosef. Mecheres shaloi be-Beis Din. If this almana is selling outside of Beis Din, Tzricha shavua, does she need to swear afterwards or does she not? Now, what is she swearing on? Rashi says she will have to swear afterwards that she didn't collect more than she was supposed to. Tosfos discusses it. Because if she sold in Beis Din, then Beis Din is responsible for making sure that everything was on the up and up. Therefore, there's no need for her to swear. They'll make sure that she's only selling the amount that she's supposed to, that she's getting a fair price for it, et cetera. Here, she's doing it outside of Beis Din. Now, remember, we said yesterday that outside of Beis Din, the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that outside of Beis Din doesn't mean she can do it, according to most of Rishonim, doesn't mean she can do it on her own. It means she has to have a Beis Din Shalav Yeritis, at least. She has to have three people, which we talked yesterday. Does that mean they have to know the dinim, or does it just mean they have to be experts on the value of karka? But whatever it is, not necessarily Tamar Chachamim. And according to the Rambam, on top of that, according to the Rambam, B'diyeved, if she sold to somebody else, not even with the Shloisha Hedyotis, then it would be okay as long as we know that the price was correct.
Even if she had three Hedyotis, why do we need her to buy it? They know.
Because the thing is, but they may be experts, but they can still make a mistake in their valuation. And second of all, they don't have the power to force her to sell Dafka at that price. What happens if she goes and ignores the valuation and sells at a different price, which is going to be the subject of the next Mishnah, by the way? And according to the Rambam, it doesn't even have to be that. According to the Rambam, it could be that she sold to somebody else. If she takes for herself, that for sure she can't do. That we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. That even the Rambam agrees to. If she says, you know what, I figure this thing is worth 200 zuz, therefore I'm going to take it for myself. I'm like, so, but that for sure doesn't work. But if she's selling it to somebody else for 200 zuz, let's say, according to the Rambam, it's okay. You only need the shleisha hadyotis v'chila. But the bottom line is, in all these cases, you might have to have her swear. So according to Rashi, what are you having her? You're having her swear that she didn't collect more than she was supposed to. Tosfos discusses a little differently, that the shvua might be rather that she sold it for a fair price. She didn't undervalue it. She didn't, let's say.
I can see being non-expert swear on that.
She'd have to be an expert on it herself, or she'd have had to have the three experts to tell her that this is the price for it and that you actually sold it for that price. As opposed to, for example, the next mission is going to talk about, what if she took property that was worth 200 zuz, which is supposed to be the value of the whole ksuba, and sold it for less than that. And now she's coming and claiming, look, I only collected 150, I'm still entitled to another 50. According to Tosfos is saying, we can make her swear that you sold it for the price that should be expected to be gotten for a property of this size. So does she have to swear? So Rav Yosef asked him back, why are you Davka asking about whether she has to swear? Shouldn't you ask a better question? Do you have to have an auction first? We've talked a few times already, the Gemara discusses it extensively in Erechin, that when you're selling property to pay off a chayv, in particular when you're selling property of your son, maybe you have to make announcements for 60 days running, or every Monday and Thursday for 60 days, whatever it is exactly, this field is available for sale, we're asking such and such price, and people will try to bid it up, and that way you'll get a decent price for it. So you're asking about whether she has to swear after the fact. Why aren't you asking about the fact whether she has to, whether they need this public announcement in the first place? So Rashi says, and not Rashi, Tosfos says that the point of Rabbi Yosef's question is, you must be assuming that no achraza is necessary. That's why you're asking. Given that there was no achraza, there was no oversight from the public, then do you need to swear afterwards? Says who? Maybe you need achraza in the first place, and if you have achraza, then there's no need to swear. Yeah. Or rather the other way. That's the way some other Rishonim learn, that if you need achraza, then you're not going to need to swear, because then it's obvious how much it was sold for, and everybody knows. But the Tosfos learns it a little differently. You're saying you don't need achraza. Says who? Maybe you need achraza, and then how much more so you need to swear. If you need to go through the whole rigmarole of making an announcement, how much more so we're going to make you swear to make sure that you actually got a fair price for it? Okay, Amalei. So Rava Breda Rava says Hachraza like on the Bailey. I don't have a need to ask about the question of whether you need Hachraza. I know you don't need that. I know you don't need that. Why? The Amar of Zera, Amar of Nachman. Almana Shashama La'atma. If the Almana evaluates the property for herself, La'asav La'klum, and what she doesn't count for anything. So what does that mean, in other words? So she says, I'm owed 200 for my ksuba. This field is worth 200. I know that this field is worth 200. I'm going to take it for my ksuba. No good.
You have to sell it.
She has to, therefore, if the, the point is, Rashi says, if the Yisraelim want to leave well enough alone, fine, let them leave well enough alone. But if they choose, they can tell her, you know what, we don't think that that was a fair valuation, give us back the field, we'll give you the 200 gulden in cash.
And if they agree?
If they agree, they agree, fine, they can agree to whatever they want.
We don't think it does.
No. So, hey Chidomi, now what are we talking about? Ida Achruz, if we made an announcement, am I loyal civil equivalent, then why would we say that what she did doesn't count for anything? The fact is, we announced for 60 days running that this field is available for 200 zuz, so we know it's worth at least that. She went and took it for herself for Huxilva, what's the problem? Ela lav deloy Achruz. Obviously, we must be talking about that they didn't make any announcements. Ula Asmahu deloy off civil equivalent, which implies, therefore, why is it no good because she took it for herself? As opposed to, though, it seems from that if she were to sell it to somebody else without achraza, then it would be v'di'evet. Then it would be v'di'evet. Okay. So that's why Rabbi Brei de Rava is saying, I know that obviously you don't need achraza. You should have it, but you don't need it in order for her to be able to validly sell. My question is, do you make her swear afterwards? You might say back, not necessarily. Lo'olam da'achruz. No, you could be talking about that in fact they did make the announcement. Why would we say even though you made announcements afterwards she went and took the field for herself, what's the problem? Because we say to her, Man Shomlich, who evaluated it for you? Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, if you sold it to somebody else, then at least it's out of the reshus of the yisayim of the yoshim, because you had permission to sell it. So therefore, fine. So we'll accept it. Vidyevin. Announcements were made. We know this property is worth at least X amount. So fine, we'll accept it. But to take it for yourself, under what authority are you doing that? Beis Din didn't tell you that you can do it. The yisayim didn't tell you that you can do it. You're not really doing it as their shliach. You're doing it for yourself. So who gave you the right to do that? Yeah, and again, it gets into the question: are we talking about that she sold it with the shloisha hadyotis, or according to the Rambam, are we talking about that she sold it without the shloisha hadyotis at all? That she just took it for herself. Ki hai dahu gavra, because it's just like a case if we have a certain person that gidu gabe kista diyasmi, they deposited with him kista that belonged to Yisraelim. What's kista? Rashi says two possibilities. One is it means hay, animal food. The other is that the word is not kista, but kasisa, which we learned in Rosh Hashanah as coral. The coral that grows that grows under sea. In Gemara terminology, it's thought of as a kind of wood, but it's very precious, very rare, of course, you know. Nowadays, most kinds of it are endangered. So whatever it is, he had either this hay or this coral in his he was guarding it. It was deposited with him on behalf of Yisraelim. Azal shama l'nafshe ba'aba me'ezuzi. He went and evaluated it as being worth 400 zuz and took it for himself in payment of a debt that their father or they themselves had owed him. Iyaker. Then afterwards, the material went up in value. Come b'shitmeya. Now it's worth 600 zuz. So the Yisraelim are claiming, they're saying, fine, you were entitled to 400 zuz, but now it's worth 600. It's still considered in our possession. Therefore, you're only entitled to 400 out of it. Return us the other 200. Also, Kameh did Rabami, and the case came to Rabami, Amalei Man Shomloch. And again, Rabami told him, who evaluated it for you? Again, same idea. You're taking it for yourself without a public hachraza or anything. That doesn't give you the right to do that. But it wasn't because we see it went... No, but it was at the time the right. It later on it, but the point is, because he didn't. Okay, but the point is, because he didn't have authorization to do it, not from Beis Din and not from the Yisraelim, then it's still considered as if it's in the proper, as if it's in the possession of the Yisraelim all this time. Same thing over here. This property is still considered to be in the possession of the Yisraelim all the time, and therefore they can tell her, we don't agree to the fact that you sold it to yourself.
This is show that she cannot take it just for herself.
That's the point. That's what we're saying, yeah. If she sells it to a third party, again, whether we're talking about the Shlosha Adyotis or according to the Rambam without it, okay, but at least there was Achraza, there's a third party involved, there's more reason to think that everything was done on the, that she had the authority to do this.
So what's implied from this case is that she sells it to a third party more expensive than what she's owed, That goes back to the
Yisraelim. Actually, we're going to talk about that in the next Mishnah in the Gemara. What happens in that? Wait.
Right. Seems to be the case.
Wait, you'll see. The hilchasa and the bottom line halacha tzricha shvur v'ena tzricha achraza, that when the almana is selling, she does need to swear afterwards, either according to Rashi that she didn't collect more than she was supposed to, or according to Tosfos that she didn't sell it or that she didn't undervalue it. V'ena tzricha achraza, but you don't need a pre-announcement. You don't need the 60 days worth of announcements. One thing is that
we
actually do pass them like Rambam.
Rambam
says
she can't take it, or she cannot.
The Rambam is saying that she can't take it for herself, which is what the Gemara was saying over here. But if she sells it, if she sells it with shlosha hedyotas, if she has three hedyotas, evaluate the value of it, then yes, according to the Rambam, she can even at that point take it for herself. When we say in our Gemara over here, man shomloch, means there was nobody else but her evaluating it. It's all being done by her herself. She's the seller. Effectively, she's the seller. She's the assessor, and she's the buyer. Then no good.
Can bribe three agents to sell.
Come on, we'll if need be, we'll bring them to Beis Din and find out what they said. And not a question. We're not assuming that they're going to bribe. That she's going to go bribe people.
Expensive property.
But we're not getting it. And besides, that's why we make her swear at the end.
That's what's implied in this. Who gave you the right to make that?
No. So according to all the other Rishonim, what it means is even though you had other people involved, the three Hedyotas, who says their evaluation was correct? Maybe they made a mistake. Exactly. Did you follow their evaluation exactly, etc.? So Mela, if you're selling it to a third party, that's different. But if you're selling it to yourself, you may well have ignored their recommendation or whatever. But yeah. Tosfos points out one thing is Beis Din when they're selling needs to have the hachraza beforehand, because there's always the possibility that they may value it incorrectly. And then, but the sale will still be considered a valid sale, as we're going to talk about later on Daf Kuf. Therefore, we need to make sure. Because Beis Din did it. Therefore, we need to make sure there's a achraza in order to make sure that everybody knows the price and Beis Din doesn't accidentally undervalue it. The almana, since we're going to talk about in the next mission, if she sells it for the wrong price, then she's just ruining things for herself.
Right.
Then therefore, there's not such a need for achraza because, okay, so
if she sells it to the right price, the sale is invalidated.
No, she sells it to herself, we said.
Yeah.
It's herself. We're talking about even if she sells it to somebody else. If she sells it to somebody else without achraza, we're saying there's no possibility that'll mess things up for the assignment. All it'll do is it'll mess things up for her, not for the assignment.
And the Beis Din misevaluating.
If the Beis Din misevaluates it, then
the whole thing.
No, but they won't. That's the thing. The sale will still be valid. That's what we're going to talk about. That's the difference. If she misvalues it, then the sale is void, as we're going to talk about in the next mission. If Beis Din misvaluates it, then
it's still valid.
Yes, that's therefore we, as a check on Beis Din, therefore we need to have that achraza. As opposed to, we don't need that check on the almana, because in any case, if it turns out that it's misvalued, then yes. Okay. Mishnah says, almana shoysek subasa machayim, an almana whose ksuba was 200 zuz, or macha shava meya mona b'masayim, she takes a field that nominally is worth 100 zuz and sells it for 200, so she manages to find somebody to buy it for twice the price, a shava masayim b'mona, or the other way around, she took a field that's supposed to be worth 200 and undervalued it and ended up selling it for only a mona. Niskabla ksubasa, okay, she received her ksuba. In the first case, we tell her, look, you've got 200 zuz cash, you've got nothing to complain about. And in the second case, we tell her it's your tough luck, as the Gemara is going to explain, that you should have realized better that you can't sell it for that price. Yeah, basically. Tosfos, by the way, points out that from the Yerushalmi, don't we have a din of Einah? I mean, there's a whole concept of Einah that we've touched on before, and which the Gemara talks about extensively in Bava Metzia, that if you sell something, if you overvalue or undervalue something more than one sixth of the purchase price, then the sale is void. So what are we talking about over here in the first place? The sale is void. So actually, the Yerushalmi mentions there's a machlokes between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan about it. Rish Lakish holds that Einah doesn't apply to Karka at all. So it's much easier to understand our Mishnah according to doesn't apply to Karka. So the Gemara mentions it. The Babli mentions it, but Matthew also. The concept of Einah is in this week's parasha. What's the context in which it's introduced? It's introduced in connection with land sales, but the actual expression in the pasuk is b'chisim kuru mimkar amisecha ikoni miyad amisecha. I'll tell you. So if you're buying something from your friend's hand, karka is not transferable from hand to hand. So therefore, Rish Lakish says that Einah doesn't apply to karka. that would fit very well with our Mishnah. Even if she sold the property for twice or half what it's supposed to be worth, no enough. Rabbi Yochanan says, I know it does apply to karka, but instead of the regular 1/6 rule, it would have to be that it wasn't that it wasn't half or twice the price. So in other words, taking a field worth 200 and selling it for 100, or vice versa. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, he would have to understand. Tosfos says Rabbi Yochanan would have to understand our Mishnah that it doesn't mean she sold not literally it was 100 and worth 100. She sold it for 200. She sold it for 199.50, let's say. So slightly less than twice.
Otherwise,
the points are different, and there would be, I know, and the sale would be that would be voided anyway. What if her ksuba was only 100 zuz? Umachra shava meya b'dinu b'mana. She took a field that's supposed to be worth 100 mana plus one extra dinar, so 101 dinar, and she sold it for 100. Mikra bato. Then the sale is void because she only had the right to 100 zuz. So she doesn't have the right to sell something that's worth 101. In the first case of the Mishnah, she was owed 200. She took a field that was worth 100 and sold it for 200, or the other way around. Fine. It's all within the amount that she's owed. Here, 101 is more than 100. Therefore, the whole thing is void. And even if she says, you know what, fine, so I'll reimburse the Yoshim their one dinner. And let the sale still be valid. Still Mikra Batel. Still the sale is Batel.
Reb Shimon Gamliel. If it's device, someone wants to sell it, they can buy it cheaper.
Not following.
Yeah, worth 101.
No, the field is worth 101. The field is worth 101, and she's trying to sell a field worth 101, but say it's still worth 100. She can't do that.
So she would sell it at 100, she would keep it.
So no, so she's not allowed to have any possession of that field in the first place to sell it, so it would be more than 100. She would have to look for, she can only look for real estate worth up to 100 to sell.
Even if she
sells
for 100, it's worth 100 bucks.
We would say that's no good because there's, yeah. Rep shipping on the alarmer? No. Lola Mikra Kayim? No. Her sale would be valid. And she takes on Kadesh to Shayabas Chachabas Tishakabin unless. Unless the overvaluation or the undervaluation is such that if it weren't for that, there would have been left a field worth at least nine tabs. A base tab is how much? A base tab is 20 by 20 amos, I think, or something. The minimum size, what we usually consider in halacha, the minimum size to be validly considered a field is something that's the size of 9 kavim. We'd be able to plant 9 kavim of wheat. 6 kavim to a saw, so we're talking 1.5 base saw. A base saw is 2,500 square amos, so we're talking about 3,800 square amos. A base saw is 2,500 square amos. It's a square of 50 by 50. A cab, the 6 cabs we saw. So a field of 9 cabim is a place where you could, is a size of 1.5 base bar. You're talking a square. What? No, so 9. Wait. So a field of 9 cabim is considered to be the minimum size that would validly consider a field. I'm going to talk about molasses. It was sold, but in times when it was fertile, you could get by on a smaller plot of land. But ordinarily, in halacha, we consider less than 9 by 9, less than 9 kavim, we consider a field.
And kavim is how many amos?
So in terms of amos, you'd be talking, it would be a square about 62 for 52 amos. In present day measurements, it would be roughly 100 by 100 feet. So like this. If she sold some of the property, and she sold, again, she took more property than her store was supposed to be worth and sold it. Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying like this. Let's figure out what she should have sold, what she should have taken to sell. If after you subtract that, which she was validly allowed to sell, if what's left is worth is less than 9 cabin in size, it's not really, doesn't really have a field of halacha anyway, then she can tell the assessment, you know what, fine, so I'll give you back the little bit of land that I should have sold. Wait, I'll give you back the little sliver of land that I shouldn't have sold. you'll add it to the remaining little bit of there. I can have it won't be appropriate to have all those seven uses for whatever purpose you can use that land for. As opposed to, if what she left over, if what she would have left over is at least nine patterns, which is a size to be validly considered a field, if they can tell her, no, you know what, we're not interested in just getting back that sliver. You have no right then to sell anything over your level. Give us back everything. And then we'll divide things properly and make sure that you get that you get only a part that you're allowed to sell for your equivalent. So those are the two scenarios that someone makes. If they would have anyway been left with something that's not a field, that she has the right to turn them the sliver of the land. Otherwise the whole thing is void. What do you mean? With Pina, we're talking instead of a field, we're talking a garden. The size is the size of half a pad. A garden is usually much smaller than a field, so half a pad would be a space of half a pad of about 10 by 20 hours, 200 square hours, roughly. So 14 hours, I'll say, so that's 20 by 20 feet. For a garden, that's considered the minimum. He said the minimum size of a garden is even smaller, a quarter of a pad. Whatever it is, same idea. If that amount would have been left, if she had done the right thing, then we may as well give back everything and start over again. Otherwise, we just tell her that, fine, you can return that little sliver and whatever else was sold. So that's what should be coming. Not a half to be a guinea. If what she sold was a guinea as opposed to a sada, then you have machloek between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Akiva. What's the smallest thing that can be considered a guinea? Is it a half a tab, or is it half of that, a quarter of a tab? Post about the Adam Ezra's, whatever silver was, 400 silver. She sold to one person a field worth 100 zuz, another person another 100 zuz, a third one also another 100 zuz. Then the last one, she took a piece of property worth 101, but that was only supposed to be doing 100, and she took property worth 101 zuz. The money of the money, and she sold it for money to raise that last money. Then we say, and then last sale is bottle, all the other three previous sales are good, because then each one is a sale on herself. The first three, she was entitled to 100 zuz each. She would have been entitled to use more, because she still had 400 to use up. Only when it came to the last one, when she only had a balance of 100 left, and she sold 101, that's no good. That's according to everybody. Well, according to Rabbi Shimon, it would be the same kind of thing whether you have a base dish of cows in there. What's the difference why we're saying if you took a field that's supposed to be worth 200 and sold it for a money, and we say Niskablos to us, we tell her you received what you were supposed to receive, even though physically you only have $100 in hand. We tell her you're the one who lost that. You're the one who was careless and sold it for half the price. Why did she took a field that's supposed to be worth 100 and sold it for 200? It should be the other way around. Kama, let her be able to say, I'm not Armachna. I got a good deal over here. I only got 100 zuz worth from your property. I managed to sell it for 200. Good, I'm a good businesswoman. You still owe me another 100.
Because we would say
that's it. The same way as if she undervalued it. We tell her, look, the property was worth 200. You sold it for less than 200, that's your problem. Come on, the same logic the other way around. If she took a property that's worth 100, she only got a property from them that's 100. On face of it, she sold it for 200. She herself sold it for 200. Good, I got a good deal. That doesn't get you off the hook. You know what? In fact, in connection with our Mishnah, Rebbe taught Hakol Baal Amoi that anything extra, when a person sends a shliach to buy something, and he ends up getting a good deal, everything goes to the owner of the money. No, meaning the original owner of the money, the mishalayach, is the one who's the mishalayach, is the one who gets the benefit, not the shliach. So in this case, the amana, who's serving as the shliach on behalf of the Yisraelim, because they're the ones who owe the money, she doesn't have the right to say, I'm not Arbachna. The overage, the extra amount of the sale, goes to them. Kibitanya, we learn in Baisa. This is what Rebbe explained in connection with his mission. Kibitanya, we learn in Baisa as follows. Suppose somebody sends his shliach to the store to buy something, and they give him one extra. It's a bright sentence. My talking about buying produce. You went to the store to buy produce, and they gave you extra for the same product. Rebbe says the extra goes to shliach. Rebbe Yosi gave him a chokin, and Rebbe Yosi says you divide it between the shliach and the mishaleach. Why do you divide it? Rashi says the reason behind dividing it is basically because we have a suffix. Was the bargain given because of the shaleach? The storekeeper wanted to do him a favor, or is it the shaleach? He had good bargaining skills. It's a suffix, therefore we divide it. Other Rishonim say differently. It's really more a matter of, do we say that it's because the one guy provided the money? If it weren't for him, there wouldn't have been a sale, because he's the one who provided the money. On the other hand, the shliach is the one who actually went and bought the thing. Again, without him, you also wouldn't have a sale. So that's both of them contributed to it, and therefore Rebbe Yosi would say that you divide it. Now, still continuing, we still haven't proven yet the point that it goes to the Baal HaMoed, because while Tanya Rebbe Yosi HaMakol Baal HaMoed, don't we have another braisa that Rebbe Yosi said everything goes to the one who the Mishaleach, the one who put up the cash? What is it? Rebbe Yosi seems to be contradicting himself in two different braises. And Omer Rami Bachama, like Pasha, Kan B'Dorosh Yesh the Kitzvah, Kan B'Dorosh in the Kitzvah. One case is talking about something where there's a fixed price for it. Rashi gives an example. You have, let's say, you go and buy beans in the store. A certain size, a pound of beans, sells for a certain fixed price. So you add. So if the guy added extra beans, obviously he meant to give it as a preference. He meant to give you something extra. Well, then you have, again, according to Rebbe Yosi, you would say then chokin, that you divide it, because you could argue on the one hand that he did it as a favor for the shliach. You could argue that he did it as a favor for the shliach. Therefore, they split it. As opposed to the second price, we'll be talking about something that doesn't necessarily have a fixed price. For example, Rashi gives examples: clothes or vegetables. Sometimes there's always, you always have sales and bargains and whatnot. Sometimes it's valuable, but not necessarily so fixed. But sometimes you give a person a discount of a few percent or something. Or you throw in a little something extra. For the talus, the idea would be that he gives him a discount. He gives him a few dollars off price. So who's entitled to the extra money? Remember, the guy, the mishaleach sent shliach to the store with $100, buy me a talus. The storekeeper says, you know what, I'll give it to you for $95. So who's entitled to pocket that $5? So that's what we're saying. It's ain't like kitzvah. Given that a talus doesn't necessarily have a fixed price, sometimes you might sell it for more, sometimes for less. And therefore we assume that it all goes to the Baal HaMoed. We assume it's not a matter of giving it as a present.
Meaning the
Mishaleach. The Baal HaMoed is entitled to the extra $5 because the seller didn't do it as a present. A present would be like the example of the beans where he gave him extra. Here it's not fixed. So therefore he decided, now you know what, I'm willing to sell it for $95. So then finally the Mishaleach is entitled for the $5. So actually we're going to talk about that too in connection with Me'ilah. But so what Shluchos Shalom Kamaisei means as far as that whatever a shliach accomplishes is considered for the most part as if the shliach did it. But that doesn't mean that there's still two different people. So that's what we mean. When we say Hakol Baal HaMoed, it's talking about a case like that, where you're selling something that doesn't necessarily... So the same thing, in other words, the word is the same thing is true as far as land. Land doesn't always have a fixed value. You look on any real estate site, you can see that the prices fluctuate from day to day, big time, yeah. And, even maybe to the point where then going to Rish Lakish, there's nowhere to in Calcutta, or even if you sell it for double or half the price. So therefore, we should say that any extra goes to the Baal HaMoed. So therefore, she's not entitled to say, look, the property was only worth 100, therefore you still owe me another 100. No, we say the fact you managed to get a good bargain, to get a good deal and sell it for 200, fine. We, you sell them, are entitled to that extra. I'm going to pop up. Hilchasa, the halacha is, if it's something that has a fixed price, like the beans, and you divide it, the shliach and the mishaleach, it's something that doesn't have a fixed price, you give all the extra to the balamos. Yeah, same thing that we just said. The question is, what's your prophet telling us? We just had Rami Bachama telling us the exact same thing. The answer is, he's telling us shinuyu, the shinin and shinuyu. We should know this answer that we gave is a valid answer. Don't just think that Rami Bachama is just saying it's sam. No, it has validity, the halacha. Yeah. Okay, but now the question is followed. Speaking of this case where you have a shliach and a shaleach, What if a person tells a shliach, Zaven li litka, go sell for me a lesech size, a piece of my land. A lesech is half a quarter is 30 saw. So you're talking, he wants him to sell a plot of land out of his field that essentially could plant 15 saw of wheat. So base saw, he said, is 50 by 50 amos. A lesech would be 15 times that. So what is it? A base core is an area about 270 by 270 amos, about 400 by 400 feet. So a lesech would be half that. So he tells him, sell me a lesech. Sell for me a lesech. But also the zavin likura. And instead, the shliach went and sold a kur, twice that amount of land. What do we say? Do we say that the shliach is just adding to what the mishaleach told him, and therefore v'litzcha miyakani? So therefore, we would say that the buyer at least did validly acquire that lesech. So the mishaleach can demand back that they can demand to undo the other half of the sale. I didn't authorize it, but the first half at least was authorized. Or maybe we say that the shliach is considered he violated what the mishaleach told him. He's considered as if he acted on his own without the permission of the mishaleach at all. The litzchanami lekani, and then the buyer didn't even have validly made a kinyan on the lesach. The mishaleach can demand the whole thing back. Amr Yaakov and Hakkur Mishmei Ravina Toshma. We have a Mishnah in Mehillah that says like this. Now we know we've talked in various places here and there about the concept of Mehillah. If you misappropriate, if you use something that belongs to Hekish for your own personal purposes, you have to repay Hekish the value of it, plus the chaymesh with 25%, and bring a korban and asham me'ilas. Most of the time, throughout Shas, most of the time we talk about digging a me'ilah, we're usually talking about the shogeg case. That's the more interesting one, really. The mazid case, but it's pretty blatantly obvious. The person uses something they know belongs to Hekdesh. Most of the cases in the Seft and the Ilah, and the ones that are quoted throughout Shas, are usually cases where a person used something and didn't realize that it was Hekdesh. Where then he's high of the carbon, etc. So, Amar Balabais L'Shlucha, Balabas tells the Shliach, Ken Lehem Chaticha La'orchim, go give a piece of meat to each of my guests, and the meat happens to be meat from a korban, but the balabas has forgotten that. For who am tushtayim, the shliach goes to the guests and tells them, you can each take two, painting up the shalosh, and in fact, each of them actually took three. Kulan malu, all of them have committed me'ilah. The balabas committed me'ilah because he meant to give them each one piece of hektish, of kodshim meat. The shliach told them that they can take an extra one, so therefore that's on his responsibility. And the orchim, each one took another one on their responsibility, so therefore they're also chayav me'ilah. Now, iyamik mishleim amoyset al b'dvar of havi. So if you're saying that the shliach is considered that he added to what the mishaleach says, meaning in other words, we say what the mishaleach said, it still exists, and the shliach just added more to it himself. And Mishmachi Balabai is mal, then fine, that explains why the Balabai did Mi'ilah, because his shlichus got accomplished. When we say, by the way, Ein Shliach to Paravera, Mi'ilah is an exception to that. If the Mishnah in Mi'ilah talks about over there, actually we're gonna have it right now, actually, that if the Shliach does what he's supposed to do, if a Balabas sends his Shliach to do something, and the Shliach does exactly what the Balabas told him, then the Balabas is going to be Chayiv Mi'ilah. That's a case where we don't say Ein Shliach to Paravera. It goes down to the Mishaleach. So if you consider that the Balabas's instructions are still what? No. Mi'ilah is one of those exceptions. Normally, that's the thing. Normally, we say Ein Shliach to Paravera. If Reuven sends Shimon to do something which is an avera, usually we say Shimon is the one responsible. in the case of murder, for example, if Reuben sends Shimon to kill somebody, Shimon is the one who's going to be chayav mitzvah. Reuben is going to be chayav b'dei shabayim. But Shimon is the one who's going to actually be tried by Beis Din. Because Reuben, there's a famous expression that Reuben can claim, divrei rabba, divrei tamma, divrei mishamim, what are you doing listening to me when you know you're supposed to listen to Beis Din? But Me'ilah is one of those exceptions. By the way, the Rambam has the Rambam chit on it is that that applies only when you have Me'ilah with nothing else. Rambam, in fact, right. Suppose that the meat we were talking about over here was the meat from a carbon oil, where there's an iser, there's a separate iser on eating the meat from a carbon oil anyway, because it's supposed to be burnt on the mizbeach. Then the Rambam says the dinim of Me'ilah wouldn't apply because then, according to the Rambam, it's the halacha. The Rambam disagrees with him. But it's not a halacha that's relevant nowadays. We don't have kavanas in Mashiach time. It'll be up to the Sanhedrin to decide the halacha. Anyway, So if we say the Balabas's instructions are considered to have been carried out just as the shliach added to them, fine. We understand why the Balabas is chayav from Eilah, because he told him to take one piece of what turns out to be kodshim meat, and instead, and he did. He took one piece. He just added another one. Eli Amit Mavid Altvar of Habi, but if you say the Shliach is considered to have violated what the Mishaleach said, Balabais Amaimal, then why is the Balabas Chayev from Eilah? But that's not, we learn in the Mishnah. Shliach Sha'at the Shlichus, if the Shliach does what his Shlichus, Balabais Mal, then the Balabas is guilty of Eilah. Loyal to Shlichus, Shliach Mal. If he didn't do his Shlichus as he was told, then it's the Shliach. Then it's the Shliach is on the hook from Eilah. So that should prove that, yes, if the Shliach goes beyond what the Mishaleach told him, he did what the Mishaleach told him but then added to it, like our case of a Levnach versus the Kurk. But that's the question. Is it considered? Do we divide it in two and say basically he did, in the case of the piece of meat, for example, he gave them one piece and he gave them another piece. So he gave them two includes one. Of Kur includes a Levnach. But that's the question, basically. Is it that two replaces one or is it that it adds to one? So from this Mishnah, it seems that it adds here. That's why the Balabais is chayev. The answer is no. Hachamayiskin and da'avolahu tlu achas midaiti shalabais va'achas midaiti. No, because you can have, it's not, the shliach doesn't come to them and just say, here, each of you take two pieces without specifying what's on the authority of the Balabais and what's on his own authority. He explicitly tells them, the Balabais told me you can each have one. On my own, I'm telling you can each have another one. So then, obviously, it's two different things. And then it's two different things. And there's no question. He did what the Balabai said, and then he added something of his own.
Well, with the authorization of the Balabai.
Well, the first one was with the authorization of the Balabai. The second one.
Take another one?
No, the waiter, told them, take another one on my authority. So then, but he did do his full shlichus first. Then he added to it. So then there's no question, yeah. And then v'shaklu inu tzlas, and then they went and took a third one, where now they know the third one they're taking on their own authority. So everyone acted independently, basically, right? Tosfos explains, in fact, if the Shliach hadn't told them this, we would still say that the Orchim are chai of their own Me'ilah, because they're still, the third one that they're taking, they know is on their own. Yeah. So therefore, so you can't... The Shliach, no, so if the Shliach hadn't told them that it's one versus the other, so that would be the question, and so that would be getting back to our question over here. Do we say that the Shliach fulfilled the Balabas' Shlichus, and therefore the Balabas should be Chayev, and he should be Chayev as well, or do we say, no, the Balabas should be Potter, because he didn't do his Shlichus?
Rather than telling him if the Shliach of the Shliach would take more, he's going to be a Chayev.
No, but the Balabas told him to take one piece, which turns out to be Potter. So that's the thing. If one piece is given, there's no question the Balabas is chayav Me'ilah. The problem is that two pieces were given. So we don't know. Is that a new thing that the Shliach did both pieces effectively is considered to be his own thing, or is it that one is on behalf of the Balabas and the other one?
The answer is.
So that's we're still in the middle of discussion. Tashma, let's look at our Mishnah. If we said that if Huxuba was worth 100 zuz, Umachar Shava May of a dinim b'mana, and she sold a field worth 101 zuz for 100. Mikra Batel. then we said the sale is canceled. Now, what do we mean? When we said she sold 101 for 100, so the Mishnah, when we learned it, we assumed that maybe she took a field worth 100 and undervalued it, 101, and undervalued it and sold it for 100. Now the Gemara is starting with the assumption that, no, maybe it means something different. My lab, the Shazam Shavam Meva Dinner, but Mana Vadinner, it means, the Pashtos, the Gemara says, that she took a field worth 101, she did sell it for 101, Umay Mana Mana Shalah, what do we mean 100? Means that she was only supposed to be getting 100, so she sold the field for its full price. It's worth 101, she sold it for 101. She's only entitled to 100, because that's all her field is. Umay Afilu, and then what does the Mishnah continue when it says, even if she says that I'll return the dinner, it means Afilu, the Ameris Akhtas, the dinner of the Yoshim, the dinner of Kauki. So even if she tells the Yoshim, you know what, fine, I'll buy back from this guy one dinner worth of the property, one sliver of the property worth of dinner, and I'll give it back to you. Do we say no good? But finding Mishra Batal, we say that what she did is Batal. So therefore, we would see from that that yes, because, why? Because she was only entitled to sell for 100. She sold property worth 101. She got 101 for it. But therefore, it's bottled. So therefore, by the same logic, if the shliach sells a quarter where he's supposed to sell a lesser, the whole thing is bottled. We don't say, just like in the case of the Amana, we don't say she sold for 100, and then we don't effectively divide it into two parts, 100 that she was allowed to sell and one that she was not allowed to sell, and say, therefore, let's undo the one and leave 100 intact. No, we say everything is bottled. Same thing should be for the lesser on the court. I'm going to run a better lesson, like, no, not necessarily, that's not what the mission means. But though, it would mean, like we started with the assumption originally, that it means that she undervalued it. It was supposed to be worth 101. She sold it for only 100.
Sold it for 100.
But it was supposed to be worth 101.
Yeah.
The Mishnah may not be talking about a case where...
She sold it for 101.
That was the assumption. That was the most question. If that's what the Mishnah means, that she actually sold it for 101, then we can prove from that the Mishnah is going to cancel. The question is, what are the circumstances? One way of looking at it is she got full value for the property, but it was worth more than her ksuba. And we say it's bottle. Same thing, man. If the shliach sells a quarter where he's only supposed to sell a lesser, we wouldn't say we divide it into two parts and we say one lesser is fine and the other lesser gets returned. We'd say the whole thing is bottle, just like in our Mishnah. And Rav Huna did have nothing to say. No, the Mishnah is not necessarily talking about that kind of case. The Mishnah is talking about a case where she undervalued it. You can't prove from the Mishnah that in the case where we were just discussing where the field was worth 101 and she actually sold it for 101, maybe indeed you would say that she buys back one dinner's worth, gives it to the Yisraelim, and 100 stills, it still stays sold.
She undervalued it.
Meaning she was 101 and she sold it for 100.
She.
It was supposed to be worth 101 and she sold it for 100.
The Mishnah says she sold it
at 101. The Mishnah doesn't say anything. The Mishnah says, Machra Shavah Meyev Adinu B'mana. The Mishnah says she sold a field worth 101 with a mana. Now, what do we mean with a mana? Do we mean that she sold it for a mana, 400 zuz? Or does it mean she sold it in payment of her ksuba, which is supposed to be worth 100, but she sold $101 worth of 101 zuz worth of property? 401 zuz. Different ways of looking at it. One is that you understand the difference. One is that she sold the property for what it's supposed to be worth, but that worth is more than what she's owed. The other way is that the property itself is worth more. Is that she undersold it, and the amount that she got for it is the exact amount that she owes. No, but if I can't, that seems to be the more straightforward way of understanding the mission. The wording in the Mishnah was Machra Shavah. The wording in the Mishnah was Machra Shavah Meir the dinner b'mana. She sold something worth 101 dinner for a mana. So for a mana in what sense? For a mana as in that's the amount she received for the field, or that's the amount that she was expected to raise from the sale. Let me rephrase that. Or is it that's the amount that she is owed, the amount out of the sale that she's entitled to get? So first, the Gemara was asking that was trying to prove if the Mishnah means that out of that 101 she's entitled to 100, and yet we're saying the whole thing is bottle, then that would be exactly the case of a lesser on the court. Now we're saying no, it's a different kind of scenario. She undervalued it. When she says b'mana, we mean that's all she got for a field which is supposed to be worth more.
Question is, we might ask somebody to say for the ozel havi reisha but the loy ozel. Why? Since given that the next part of the Mishnah has to be talking about a case where she undervalued it. That's the last case in the Mishnah. Reisha but the loy ozel. Then necessarily the previous case has to be talking about what she didn't, because otherwise it would be repetitious. The Ketani Sefer, the Mishnah continues, Hosek Tzubasa Abba Meyas Zuz, Tzubba was worth 400, Machal Azeba Manav, Lazeba Manav, Lachan Yafa Manav, Adinib Amana, and the last one, she sold a field worth 101 for 100, and here, perhaps, we should assume that means that she actually only got 100 for it. Michal Potol, then we say that the Shalachan Michal Potol, Shakul and Michal and Tayyam, then we say that in a different place. And we say the last one is Potol, the rest of them are still valid. So therefore, so now that last part, the pashtus, you can't say that both parts of the Mishnah are talking about where she undervalued it. There's no reason to say that. L'chura, one part must be talking about where she undervalued it, the other part not. And therefore, we would see that even if she didn't undervalue it, the sale is bottle. Why? Because of the case of Lesek on the Kura, we would say it's bottle. The answer is not necessarily void. Reisha b'sefer b'dozel. No, both cases could be talking about where she undervalued it. The Sefer, HaKamash Malan, so you know what the Sefer is telling us? Time of the Ozel, Vidyasmi. The reason why we say that it's no good is because she undervalued it when it affects the Yisomim, because at this point she was only owed 100. She took a field worth 101 and sold it for 100. She's affecting them by that because she took away more land from them than she was supposed to. And that's why we're saying it's bottom.
Knowingly.
Not knowingly necessarily, but the point is it still harms them. Wait, but we could argue, what if in one of the previous sales, she was owed 400 at the beginning, what if in one of the previous sales she took a field worth 101 and sold it for 100? Then we would say, okay, Michrakayim, the same way as the first part case of the Mishnah, had been she took a field worth 200 and sold it for 100, and we'd say to her, tough luck, you took, the field was supposed to be worth 200. Same thing in this case, if you would have, if she was owed 100, she was owed 400, she takes a field worth 101 and sells it for 100, we would say, okay, now you're down to 299, not 300.
That's comforting.
No, that doesn't contradict. We would say that, in other words, that what the last part of the Mishnah is telling us the following fish. We're saying like this, the Mishnah is not getting into the case what happens if she sells, if she takes a field that's worth more than the amount that she's owed now and sells it actually for more than that amount. That the Mishnah is not addressing. The Mishnah is addressing cases where she took a field that's worth the amount where she took a field that's worth more than what she's owed at this point and sells it for more than what she's owed at this point. But there's two different possibilities. One is where to begin with, she was only owed 100, and the field was worth 101, and she sold it for 101. They were saying the sale was bottle. The other case we're talking about is, and we say the same thing, if all that's left out of 400 is 100, same idea. But what we're saying is, in earlier sales within the 400, if, for example, when she started out, I'm now owed 400, I'm going to take a field which is worth 101 and sell it, and she ends up only getting 100 for it, then we would say, fine. The field is worth 101. You got $101 worth of field from the excitement. I only sold it for 100. Tough luck. You're now down to 299. You don't have to say that. That the mixer is talking about any cases where the actual amount she got for the sale is more than what she owed at that point.
Total of what she sold.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I guess we'll stop over here for my time.